the headlines this hour. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has praised the country's lawmakers for enacting a law in 2020 to counter unilateral U.S. sanctions. China and Russia signed several agreements to take their bilateral cooperation to a higher level. Also coming up, the Kremlin spokesman reiterates that Russia will achieve all of its goals in Ukraine either through special military operations or other means. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has hailed the country's parliament for enacting a law in 2020 to counter unilateral U.S. sanctions. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the strategic act saved Iran from, quote, bewilderment in the nuclear issue. The law defined clear conditions, including the removal of the U.S. sanctions, in order to revive the 2015 deal, also known as a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. The leader made the remarks during a meeting with Iranian parliamentarians on the 40th anniversary of the liberation of the city of Khorramshahr. Ayatollah Khamenei called the 1982 victory a miraculous event that has continued to awe many to this day. The recapture of the city from the forces of former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein is considered to be a turning point in the 1980s war imposed on Iran. Political commentator Mohsen Abbas believes Western countries have resorted to a soft war against Iran. Let's listen to the rationale behind his assertion.
Well, it was a war that was instigated and planned and urged on by the Zaire Western Empire. Everybody talks about Saddam, but actually the real focus ought to be on the people who egged him on, who gave him the sureties that he would get the weapons he needed, and gave him all the encouragement to invade Iran rather ruthlessly. So it was a dirty war. It was a war to try and bring down arguably the most refreshing revolution of perhaps the last 500 years, because it was a revolution rooted in Islam. It was rooted in the idea of a moral political aspiration, and moral politics is what Iran and the Islamic Revolution brought at that time. And since then, all we've seen is a non-stop effort by Western powers to bring that that concept down, whether it's the political welayat-e-faqih system, whether it's the actual economic mechanisms that are coming in place, whether it's the technological advancement of Iran, whether it was the geopolitical commitment to the oppressed in especially that Western Asian region. My point is, the most important aspect perhaps for the Iranians now to focus on is the soft war. Because the military war, I don't think it can be won by the Zaire Western Empire, as they've been trying to do. I don't think they can destroy Iran from within by raising a revolution against the establishment. What they could do is, through culture and economic means, they thought they could do it. And they used the terrorism, the economic terrorism, as a major player. And the counter policy that has come up against that has been Islamic Republic of Iran, and Ayatollah Khamenei mentions it today, is the resistance economy.
Iran has strongly condemned unilateral sanctions on countries, saying that they have negative impacts on food security, especially for women and children.
Protecting civilians during conflict is critical, since it has a devastating impact on their life. Under international humanitarian law, all parties to a conflict are required to ensure that civilians have access to essential goods and services, including food and medical care. Yet, in the Middle East, our critical region, terrorism, occupation, illegal unilateral acts, and the presence of illegal foreign forces continue to wreak havoc on civilians and their infrastructure.
Iran's deputy ambassador to the UN made the remarks in an address to a Security Council meeting on the security of civilians in armed conflicts. Zahra Ershadi said such coercive measures cause problems for health services and humanitarian organizations as well. She underlined that the sanctions also restrict access to medical equipment and hamper humanitarian aid efforts. Ershadi noted that the removal of unilateral sanctions would facilitate rapid humanitarian response and ensure access to vital relief aid. She said ending armed conflicts through political dialogues is necessary for the effective protection of civilians. Iran takes over the rotating presidency of the Asian Clearing Union during its 51st summit held in the Iranian capital, Tehran. The governor of the Central Bank of Pakistan, as the former chairman, handed over the presidency to the governor of the Iranian Central Bank, Mohammad Reza Farzin. Jamil Ahmad said the union can come up with new ideas for alternative currencies that would bring more benefits. Farzin, for his part, expressed hope for more cooperation between the ACU members. The VP of Iran and top banking officials of the member states have attended the meeting. The Asian Clearing Union, that has 9 members, was established in 1974 with the aim of reducing dependence on global currencies, especially the U.S. dollar. The main objective of the union is to facilitate payments among member countries for eligible transactions. Our correspondent Gisumish Ahmadi has told us more about the 51st Asian Clearing Union Summit in Tehran.
Well, basically what you said was the gist of what the whole entire meeting, the 51st meeting of the Board of Governors, is all about. De-dollarization is high on the agenda. And, Danny, this might seem like a new concept, but let's not forget that the ACU was established in 1974 with the aim of providing an opportunity for the member states to use their own monetary system in order to do business. This transaction. So it is not a new concept, but 50 years later, we see that the political scene and the new world order that is emerging is providing the groundwork for this to actually happen. Iran was a member from the very start when it was established in 1974 with a number of regional countries, including India, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Nepal. But what's happened today, and something that will be discussed later during the day, is devising a mechanism to accept new members into the ACU. And we have 3 observer member states that are present today. Russia, Belarus, and Afghanistan are present today. And if the member states agree, these countries might also join the ACU.
Tens of thousands of Yemenis have hit the streets across the country to denounce global arrogance. People held placards and chanted slogans against hegemonic powers while marching through the capital Sana'a and other major cities. They also called for the boycott of Israeli and American goods and pledged to stay committed to the Palestinian cause. During a speech on Tuesday, the leader of Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement also hailed rallies against the powers trying to take over Muslim nations. Abdulmalik al-Houthi emphasized the need to stand united in the face of plots that are being hatched by those powers. He also called for resilience and courage to make U.S. and Israeli conspiracies futile. The Russian Prime Minister is on a 2-day visit to China, as the two countries are determined to further develop ties in the wake of Western pressure. Mikhail Mishustin has told Chinese President Xi Jinping that Moscow and Beijing are standing up against Western hegemony.
Our countries together resist attempts by the collective West to maintain global dominance using illegal sanctions to impose its will on independent states. I am confident that Russia and China will give a resolute response to these dangerous aspirations and create favorable conditions for confident progress towards our common strategic goals.
The Russian premier held the two countries' partnership at a time of turbulent international markets. The Chinese president, for his part, said Beijing-Moscow relations are deepening at a high level. Mishustin sat down with Xi, the capital of Beijing, after he signed a number of deals with the Chinese premier. Moscow has been pivoting to Beijing since the West imposed anti-Russia sanctions over the Ukraine war. The other side, China, has emerged as an economic giant. Despite U.S. sanctions, it has counted on Russian energy, which is facing restrictive measures from the West. The pair say that the deepening ties are not targeted at a third country. Their leaders have also pledged a new world order devoid of Western dominance. Russia has reiterated that it will achieve its intended goals in Ukraine through the ongoing special military operation there or by other available means. The Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov has been quoted by a Russian news agency as saying that Moscow is taking under consideration only the completion of its military operation in Ukraine. He said ensuring its interests is the main objective to Russia. Peskov was responding to a question as to whether Russia would consider the possibility of freezing the conflict. he did not specify what other means Russia would take to achieve its objectives. The Kremlin has repeatedly said that its actions in Ukraine are aimed at defending Russia's own security in the face of NATO's eastward expansion. But Kiev and its Western allies call Russia's operation an aggression. Russia has issued a stern warning following a recent attack on its western borders by anti-Russia armed groups, pledging, quote, extremely harsh response to future raids.
On May 22nd, a unit of the Ukrainian Nationalist Formation invaded the territory of the Russian Federation in the area of the international checkpoint in the Belgrade region. In the course of the counter-terrorist operation, the Nationalist Formations were blocked and defeated by airstrikes, artillery fire, and the active actions of the Western military district units covering the state border. The remaining Nationalists were driven back to the territory of Ukraine, where they were completely eliminated. More than 70 Ukrainian terrorists were eliminated, as well as machinery and armored vehicles. We will continue to respond promptly and harshly to such actions by Ukrainian militants.
Shoigu described the move as a terrorist act by the Kiev regime against Russian civilians. Ukraine, however, has denied any role in the assault, which has been claimed by two anti-Kremlin far-right armed groups. In the meantime, the Kremlin says the U.S. or the use of U.S.-made weapons in the attack indicates the West's growing involvement in the conflict. The U.S. State Department has dismissed any direct involvement in the incident, saying the decision on where to use Western equipment fully rests on Kiev itself. Well, doctors at an emergency center in Donetsk say that they keep receiving dozens of military personnel and civilians who suffered injuries caused by shelling from Ukrainian forces. The number of patients has significantly increased since more NATO weapons have been used in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Our correspondent Max Chiarelli reports from Donetsk.
Specialists at the Republican Hospital in Donetsk have warned that the number of civilians who have been hospitalized is dramatically on the rise as Ukrainian armed forces are using more advanced NATO-supplied weapons. Almost 1,000 wounded have been treated since the beginning of 2023, the trauma center in Donetsk has reported. Specialists believe that the latest weapons sent by NATO countries are more advanced and lethal.
Until not long ago, only civilians living near the front line got wounded or killed. Now, following the new medium and long-range weapons provided by NATO to Ukraine, we have a much higher number of civilians being hospitalized. Look behind my back. Our hospital was targeted a few weeks ago.
Ukrainian armed formations have shelled hospitals a number of times over the past months. This hospital in central Donetsk, Voroshilovsky district, was hit by the artillery on April 28. That shelling caused 9 civilian casualties and severe damage to the building. On that occasion, among the dead civilians was also a child. 16 people also suffered injuries from the blast. Kyiv's forces fired high-explosive fragmentation missiles produced in Slovakia and transferred to Ukraine by NATO countries.
We have been denouncing the situation since 2015. We started with the European Court of Human Rights, but for inexplicable reasons, our case was dismissed. We tried then with the International Criminal Court, but they have never visited the Donbas, and this case was subsequently dismissed. We are now trying to bring it forward to the UN. Will human rights be finally protected here as well?
In fear of attacks on residential areas, kids have been forced to switch to remote learning throughout the whole school year, which, by the way, ends on Tuesday. Max Chivili, Donetsk.
Hundreds of supporters of detained WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, including his family members, have staged a rally in the Australian city of Sydney to demand his release. The rally was scheduled to coincide with the U.S. President's visit to Sydney to attend the Quad Leaders Summit. But Joe Biden's trip was called off due to a crisis over the debt ceiling at home. Assange's family members thanked his supporters. Assange, an Australian citizen, was arrested in the UK in 2019 after Ecuador revoked his diplomatic asylum at its embassy in London, where he spent 7 years. He is now battling extradition to the U.S., where he is wanted on criminal charges. Assange's WikiLeaks released some 700,000 classified military documents, which exposed the U.S. government and its wrongdoings in Iraq and Afghanistan. Washington says the release of the documents put American lives in danger. Earlier, Annette Brownlee from the Independent and Peaceful Australia Network joined us with her take on the protests in Sydney to demand the release of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange.
Julian Assange is definitely a hero to free release of information and to free journalism around the world. You know, he's been incarcerated now for 11 years and the last 4 years in high security prison in Belmarsh prison in London. So, you know, he has suffered greatly for his belief in the right of people around the world to know about the war crimes that were committed in Afghanistan and Iraq. He released information that indicted the United States in war crimes, and they're not prepared to let him off, and they want to set an example to journalists around the world. Now, we're very buoyed by the fact that finally, with a new government, a 12-month-old government in Australia, there seems to be more serious efforts being made by this government for an Australian citizen to be released from the prison, and that requires that the United States drop the charges. In fact, by America's actions, their war crimes have been better understood around the world. Now, I don't think that justifies what Julian has had to experience, but nevertheless, this, I think, has backfired on the U.S. Government.
A Missouri man who drove a box truck into the security barriers near the White House has been arrested and charged for multiple offenses. The crash, which had no casualties, happened at Lafayette Square, one block from the White House compound. According to witnesses, investigators pulled a Nazi flag from inside the truck. The driver is identified as 19-year-old Say Varsity Candela of Chesterfield, Missouri, who got immediately arrested by Secret Service agents. Candela is facing a battery of charges, including threatening to kill, kidnap, or inflict harm on the president, vice president, or family member. The police are still investigating the potential intentions behind the incident. Since the riot at Capitol following the 2020 U.S. elections and other similar incidents, security around the White House and other federal buildings has highly intensified. In another incident in 2021, a vehicle struck two Capitol police officers, killing one. The driver was shot dead. New poll shows Americans are worried about the mental fitness of prominent candidates for the 2024 presidential election in the country. According to the joint NPR-PBS News Myers poll, a majority of American adults are concerned about the ability of both President Joe Biden and his predecessor Donald Trump to rule the country again. Over 60% of the respondents said that Biden's mental fitness to rerun for president is a concern, while more than 50% had similar opinions about his presidential or potential Republican rival. Biden at 80 is the oldest president in U.S. history and has been the subject of accusations about his acuity. While Biden's approval rating has slightly increased, about 40% Democratic and 80% Republican voters still questioned about his mental fitness. The poll asked over 2,400 American adults about their main concern in the 2024 election. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Let's bye-bye for now. We'll be right back.
follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
In Northern Ireland elections, Sinn Féin has become the largest party in local government. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Sinn Féin has become the biggest political party in Northern Ireland local government after stunning gains in council elections. It swept past the Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP, and became the first nationalist party to hold the most council seats, delivering a political and psychological blow to unionism. Sinn Féin made unprecedented breakthroughs in parts of County Down and County Antrim and almost doubled its vote from the 2019 local elections in Balmoral, Belfast's most affluent ward. With 456 of 462 seats spanning 11 councils declared on Saturday night, Sinn Féin had 143 seats, up from 105. And the Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP, remained at 122. The non-aligned alliance had 65, a gain of 14, while the moderate Ulster Unionist Party, the UUP, and moderate Nationalist Social Democratic and Labour Party, the SDLP, slumped respectively to fourth and fifth place. The share of the first preference votes underlined the dominance of Sinn Féin, which won 30.9% versus 23.3% for the Democratic Unionist Party, 13.3% for the Alliance, and 10.9% for the Ulster Unionist Party, and 8.7% for the Social Democratic and Labour Party, the SDLP. Nationalist parties won 19,000 more first preference votes than unionist parties, according to Nicholas White, a sophologist with the consultancy APCO Worldwide. The election was also notable for Lillian Sinoy Barr, an SDLP candidate in Derry, becoming the first black person to be elected as a politician in Northern Ireland. Sinn Féin tapped nationalist resentment at a DUP boycott of power-sharing that has blocked Sinn Féin's deputy leader, Michelle O'Neill, from becoming Northern Ireland's first minister. Michelle O'Neill fronted a presidential-style campaign that enticed SDLP voters to back Sinn Féin, which was an IRA mouthpiece during the Troubles. These election results are a positive endorsement of Sinn Féin's message that workers, families and communities need to be supported, and that the blocking of a new assembly by one party must end now, said Michelle O'Neill, who was mobbed by cheering supporters. The DUP leader, Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, became a recruiting sergeant for the Republicans, Suzanne Breen, a commentator, wrote in the Belfast Telegraph. The longer Michelle O'Neill is blocked from becoming Northern Ireland's first minister, the more voters are driven into the arms of her party. Sinn Féin's triumph consolidated its success in last year's assembly elections, when it eclipsed the DUP as the biggest party in Northern Ireland and presented unionism with another reminder of its shriveling demographic and political position. For unionism, it's perhaps a wake-up call and smell-the-coffee moment, Edwin Poots, a former DUP leader, told the BBC. Edwin Poots said, "The results showed the need for greater unity among unionists who split their vote between the DUP, the Ulster Unionist Party, and a traditional unionist voice, the TUV. Analysts said the result raised deeper, more troubling questions for those who favour keeping Northern Ireland in the United Kingdom. The Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP, emerged intact from what was a proxy referendum on its decision to paralyse the Stormont executive and assembly to protest post-Brexit trading arrangements. While this herded nationalists to Sinn Féin, it also consolidated the DUP as unionism's dominant force. The moderate Ulster Unionist Party and the hard-line, traditional unionist voice were squeezed, letting Donaldson claim vindiction for the DUP policy of claiming credit for the Windsor Framework, which tweaked the original Northern Ireland Protocol and demanding further concessions before restoring the Good Friday Agreement institutions. There is speculation that the Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP, will do so in the autumn. Alliance consolidated its position as Northern Ireland's third biggest political party. Lewis Boyle, an 18-year-old A-level student who stood for the party in the Antrim and Newton Abbey Council, became what was thought to be Northern Ireland's youngest elected representative. Colm Eastwood, the leader of the SDLP, said he would not resign despite the party's losses. "If I thought the right course of action was to step down, I would do it in a heartbeat," Colm Eastwood said. The London Evening Standard has also covered the same story and tells us more. Sinn Féin's Vice President Michelle O'Neill has hailed a momentous election result, with her party becoming the largest in council elections in Northern Ireland. As the local government elections count neared its conclusion on Saturday, 20th of May, the Republican Party had 138 elected councillors, with gains achieved across the region. With just a small number of seats outstanding, it means Sinn Féin has replicated its result from last year's Northern Ireland Assembly election when it became the biggest party at Stormont. Michelle O'Neill used the latest election victory to repeat her call for the Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP, to return to the power-sharing institution at Stormont. The DUP currently has 120 council seats. The Alliance Party has 65 seats, the Ulster Unionists has 53 seats, and the SDLP has 39 seats, with 33 seats going to others. The Democratic Unionist Party leader, Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, insisted that his party had polled strongly, but said unionism needed to learn lessons from the council elections. Sinn Féin secured 30.9% of first preference votes, ahead of the DUP on 23.3%, 13.3% for the Alliance, and 10.9% for the Ulster Unionist Party, and 8.7% for the SDLP. The turnout for the election was 54%. 9 of the 11 council areas have now completed their count.
علي حبه جنة قسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Wassalatu wassalamu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa ala ahli baytihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. And it is a great opportunity for us to focus on a very important topic, and that is the topic of prophethood, and try to think about the ideas that Imam Ali alayhi salam is bringing forth and in the direction in which he wants us to think. And amongst that is the fact that in the first sermon of Nahjul Balagha, he mentions about certain things that are the duties of the messengers and the responsibilities of the messengers. It is something that really, if you are to focus on well, we would realize the wealth of knowledge and the wealth of experience that we could gain from him, so that we can, you know, kind of tune our lives towards the direction that the messengers wanted us to kind of reach. Amongst those duties of the messengers is what Imam Ali alayhi salam says, وَيُرُوهُمْ آيَاتِ الْمَقْدِرَةِ, that the prophets and messengers, they show to the people the signs of God's power.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, the messengers and the prophets, their duty is to show people the signs of God's power. And of course, God's power is manifested in everything. An example that Imam Ali alayhi salam gives, he says, مِن سَقْفٍ فَوْقَهُمْ مَرْفُوءٍ, if they pay attention to the roof on top of them that has been raised, referring to the sky, the skies and whatever there is inside. You see, many times because of human beings not getting that push, not receiving that push to kind of focus on a certain aspect of creation, when they don't get that push, they kind of are lazy and they do not really focus on that and on that particular aspect. Let me give you an example. You know, how many times have you walked through a certain garden or a park and seen, you know, leaves falling? Many of us have seen that. And many people before us have seen those things happening. They've seen fruits falling from the trees. They've seen a tree, then they see suddenly fruit falling from up the tree. And people, even before that, before the time of, let's say, Isaac Newton, they saw this happening. But few people realize that there is a force that is making this happen. there is some force that is there between entities. People didn't realize that. They took it for granted. But Newton, he asked that question, that why didn't the apple fly above? Why did it fall down? Why didn't it, let's say, go to another direction? Why did it have to come down? And these types of questions are what opened up the idea that there is a force called the gravitational force. You see, if this was not there, if Newton had not thought in other directions, then it wouldn't be possible for us today to have such a discovery.
IRIB English Radio presents a detailed commentary of the Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, on the program Gate of Knowledge.
Now, we therefore realize that the way human beings think is very important. They need to be directed in a certain way sometimes. They need to be reminded to think in a certain direction. The reason is that majority of the people, they engage with life in a very trivial manner. You see, it's about eating food and drinking and having fun and, pleasures of life, these apparent pleasures of life and apparent interactions that are there in life, earning money, glamour. Normally people, unfortunately, they are like this. It's very rare to find a person who would spend time in their life, in their day-to-day affairs, to sit down and think for a few moments and open their hearts and open their minds to think about issues, to contemplate and ponder. And you notice those who have this attitude and this kind of habit to think and to ponder about certain intricate realities and, slightly being out of their comfort zones to think about things, you'll see these are the ones that are successful. And it is not something that they need to really spend so much time and effort in. It's just a matter of, dedication and planning that would make them achieve very great heights. What we're trying to say now is that we as human beings, if we were to focus on certain aspects of life, we would see the hand of God in these creations, in these things. Just like Isaac Newton, when he saw that apple falling, many people had seen, but when he saw the apple falling, he asked the question, why? And he was looking for something deeper. And that's how he came to the idea of the gravitational force. That today, if you just think about it, like, how important is this force? I mean, today when we want to even fly a small thing like a plane or something, we need to really calculate how much force, how much gravitational force, how much weight, how much everything. And then if you want to, for example, fly a rocket, that would make it even more complicated. So this force, you see how much discovering this force was important. And that means that if you are to take a step further, there are other things that we can discover. And this is something, and I'm not just saying in the material sense, but also in the spiritual sense, in terms of realization. We pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He gives us the opportunity to ponder in the issues of God's creation of the universe. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من
الفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. The Limelight.
A bill introduced in the U.S. Senate this week would ban American schools from using controversial discipline techniques, including forcibly restraining children and using so-called scream rooms. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. A bill introduced in the U.S. Senate this week would ban schools from using controversial discipline techniques, including forcibly restraining children and using scream rooms, which critics say are tantamount to abuse of children. The Keeping All Students Safe Act, introduced by Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy, targets all schools receiving federal funding in the United States. Each state would need to submit a written plan for managing situations requiring severe discipline. The move comes after widespread criticism and pressure to end the practices, which Senator Murphy called barbaric. This is a hidden epidemic in this country, Senator Chris Murphy said. Kids in schools that are acting out are often being sent into solitary confinement, shoved into what some schools call scream rooms, as punishment, where they're told to sit inside an isolated room, sometimes with padded walls, to correct their misbehaviors. Other children are being restrained, being tied down after they act out. None of this helps these kids. This isn't the first time that Senator Murphy has tried to end restraint and seclusion. He's introduced the Keeping All Students Safe Act multiple times over the last decade, though each previous attempt has failed. Senator Chris Murphy said he's hopeful things will be different this time. My hope is that Republicans want parents to have a bigger role in schools. We'll take a look at this legislation and see it as something they would support, Senator Murphy said. Senator Chris Murphy may have reason to be hopeful. Some districts have moved to review the use of restraint and seclusion, or even ban it from all except the most extreme circumstances, in response to pressure from parents and activists. Even if it passes, the bill would not address the widespread arrest of elementary-aged children that CBS News reported last autumn. The report highlighted hundreds of arrests of young children in U.S. schools. CBS News analysis of data from the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights revealed that more than 700 children were arrested in U.S. elementary schools during the 2017-2018 school year alone. Children with disabilities and black children were disproportionately affected. Last year, Senator Chris Murphy co-sponsored the Counseling Not Criminalization in Schools Act, designed to address those arrests with more counselors in schools. That bill also failed to pass the Senate. When asked if he plans to reintroduce that legislation, Senator Murphy said, "I haven't made a decision on that yet." New data on schools discipline from the Department of Education, which was delayed due to COVID-19 school closures, is expected to be released this summer. Senator Murphy said he's concerned the numbers won't be good. "I worry that the arrest data is not going to be any better because we have more police inside schools than ever before," Senator Murphy said. "Teachers are stressed out right now. And often what happens is that you've got a police officer in the school and it's tempting to outsource discipline to the police officer. And when you do that, instead of the kid ending up in the principal's office, the kid ends up in the back of a police car." Website jdsupra.com has also covered this story and tells us more. Lawmakers have introduced new bills in both houses of Congress seeking to end schools' use of dangerous disciplinary techniques, traditionally employed disproportionately against students with disabilities. The Keeping All Students Safe Act would ban the use of seclusion techniques in schools, referring to the practice of locking students in secluded spaces as a response to certain behaviours. The bill would also reduce the use of physical restraint techniques to counteract real and perceived behavioural outbursts. According to the US Department of Education, some 122,000 students were subjected to restraint and seclusion techniques during the 2015-2016 school year. Of those, students with disabilities accounted for 71% of all restraint cases and 66% of all seclusion cases. Currently, no federal regulations exist concerning such techniques. In May of 2012, the Obama administration released the first federal guidance to schools regarding restraint and seclusion practices. The guidance urged that restraint and seclusion techniques be banned entirely for the purposes of disciplining students and be employed only where there is an imminent danger of serious physical harm to self or to others. Furthermore, the guidance recommended banning the use of mechanical restraints in American schools, the use of any drugs or medications not prescribed by students' medical professional, and the use of any restraint that restricts a child's breathing or harms the child. Schools were also encouraged to improve their parental notification procedures when such practices are used. The Keeping All Kids Safe Act comes as many disability rights advocates in the United States have raised concerns that the current Department of Education may rescind the Obama administration's guidance. It's barbaric for schools to confine students alone in locked rooms or to use abusive methods to restrain little children, said Senator Chris Murphy, a Democrat from Connecticut, a sponsor of the Senate bill. Treating school kids this way should not be tolerated in America, period, Senator Murphy said. In a letter sent to Congress on 12th of December 2018, the Leadership Conference for Civil and Human Rights, the nation's largest coalition of civil rights groups, listed the bill as one of its top priorities for the new Congress. A version of the Keeping All Kids Safe Act has been introduced each year since 2009. The House of Representatives passed a version in 2010, but that version stalled in the U.S. Senate.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد. اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
ولا تتفرقوا فيه.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
كتاب الله. Oh Lord, here I am pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith, which has been transmitted from Imam Ali alayhi salam. This hadith is about the believer and the characteristics of the believer, the Imam. He describes the believer's virtues and characteristics. You know, belief and faith, iman, and also the believer, his virtues, his characteristics, this is a topic which has been alluded to in many places in the Holy Quran. In one verse of the Holy Quran, we read the following. God says, "The faithful are only those whose hearts tremble with awe when Allah is mentioned, and when His signs are recited to them, they increase their faith. And who put their trust in their Lord, maintain the prayer, and spend out of what we have provided them. It is they who are truly faithful. They shall have a ranks near their Lord, forgiveness, and a noble provision." In this same vein, Imam Ali alayhi salam has been narrated as having said the following. "The believer is such that his joy is evident on his face, whereas his sorrow is in his heart." This kind of alludes to the disposition of the believer, meaning he has a sorrow in his heart. And even if he's sorrowful in his heart, he doesn't express it. He doesn't allow anybody to know it. The Imam says his breast is at its widest, meaning he has a big heart, but his ego is at its lowest. Meaning he's very generous, he's very kind, he's very forgiving, and his ego, his love for himself is very low. He says he despises high rank and shuns reputation. He doesn't like to be given a high post. He'll be satisfied with a low post, and he doesn't want to be famous. His grief is long-lasting, and his ambition is lofty. His lofty ambitions, and he has grief in his heart for his sins and for, his mistakes. His silence is much, he doesn't talk a lot, and his time is occupied. He's never lethargic or lazy, he's always busy and working. He is grateful, extremely patient. You know, when he's given something, he's thankful for it. He's patient and immersed in deep